Hi, this is Emmy Ganos from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. We'll get started in just a minute or two. Hi, this is Emmy Ganos from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. We're going to get started with the webinar in just a few minutes. Hi, this is Emmy Ganos from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. I think we'll get started with the webinar. Thank you all so much for taking the time out of your day to attend. We're really excited to have so many of you joining us for this webinar today. So again, I'm Emmy Ganos. I'm a senior program officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And I wanna start with a few basics. First, I want to let you all know that this webinar is optional and it's intended to go over the information in the call for proposals and also answer questions from potential applicants. All participants in this webinar are in muted mode. You can submit a question using the Q&A feature in RingCentral, and I'll answer as many questions as I can during our time today. And the answers to those questions will be summarized in the FAQs document, the frequently asked questions document associated with this funding opportunity. So if you have a question that we don't have time to get to in the webinar, if you've submitted it in the Q&A feature, then I will aim to answer that later and put it in the FAQs document. And you're also welcome to email me a question after the webinar if you still have an open question. As a note, this webinar is being recorded, and we will make the recording available within the next couple of days on the RWJF website. So let's get started. Here's a little bit about what we're going to cover today. I'm going to share some background on this call for proposals, go over the program goals and components, including for part one, clear principles, and part two, guidance. I will share some information about how to apply and briefly discuss the selection criteria, share the key dates, and then we'll reserve the vast majority of time for questions and answers. Before we dive in, I want to let you know that everything that we're covering today is outlined in the funding opportunity brochure or the call for proposals document, which you see here on your screen. This document has much more detail than I'm going to be able to go over in this call, so I encourage you to download it and use it as your guide. The way that you can access the call for proposals document is by going to the page on the RWJF website that outlines this funding opportunity. And on the right side of the page, you'll see a section called Key Materials. The funding opportunity brochure is the third one on the list, and I've circled it in red here so that it's very detailed. So you can access it on your own. Again, really be sure to read this because it outlines our expectations for the program in detail and also what we are looking for in applicants and in the proposals. So to begin, I wanted to share some details on why RWJF released this funding opportunity. As many of you know, RWJF is working with partners to build a culture of health in which everyone in America has a fair and just opportunity for health and well-being. The healthcare system, in our view, has an important role to play in realizing this vision, and the foundation has a strategic focus on transforming our health and healthcare systems to be able to support people in their efforts to live their healthiest possible lives. So in our view, a culture of health requires that healthcare systems must be responsive to patients' life circumstances and must work together with economic and social support services and work more broadly to support community-focused population health work. And more, we see that the healthcare sector is recognizing the need to embrace new strategies to more holistically meet the needs of the people they serve, both internally in their clinical work and externally working with partners and in communities. But despite growing momentum, there's increasing confusion over what healthcare's ideal role should be in supporting patients to live healthier lives. What are the roles and responsibilities for healthcare providers or for payers in addressing non-medical health-related needs? And really, to whom are these entities ultimately responsible? How does clinical care itself need to change to better meet patient needs or to achieve health equity? The healthcare sector has adopted innovations at various levels to address social determinants of health and to work with patients and in communities. And these efforts have raised the importance of roles and responsibilities and about payment and finance, these types of innovations. These kinds of efforts have revealed the potential for unintended consequences with healthcare taking on a broader role in responding to patients' needs outside of care delivery. And relatedly, we've seen concerns that a new, broader focus may divert attention away from healthcare's core responsibility to provide high-quality acute and chronic illness care and clinical preventive services. So at RWJF, we want to see healthcare systems fully considering their roles in addressing systemic inequities in their own delivery systems, as well as working closely with consumers and advocates to understand and address community concerns. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is seeking to support a long-term major transformation in the healthcare sector to move toward our vision for a culture of health. In order to achieve this, we really recognize that we must identify a clear direction for the healthcare system to move toward. So we wish to join with others to set a high standard for what healthcare could look like in a culture of health. And we want all of the work that the foundation supports in the healthcare system to reflect those high standards. This is why we are supporting this program. With so much innovation and experimentation in the field, we think that healthcare is at a critical juncture and see an opportunity to articulate a set of principles that clarifies our vision for healthcare's responsibility to provide care that focuses on patients' interrelated physical, emotional, and social goals and needs. Standing behind a clear set of principles will help us at RWJF and those that we work with, our grantees and others, to consistently move in a direction that can live up to our aspirations for a culture of health. We want these principles to be bold, to be grounded in evidence, to be people who are facing the greatest barriers to living healthy lives. We want these principles to be communicated in ways that resonate with the audiences that we want to reach, and using concrete examples, a use case. So the overall goals of this program are to articulate a set of principles describing bold aspirations for the healthcare sector to be responsive to patients' goals, needs, and life circumstances along the full spectrum of population health improvement activities. We want to demonstrate how healthcare can and should help people that they serve to live their healthiest lives with a focus on making change within healthcare delivery systems. And we want to identify and execute communication strategies that are targeted to healthcare leaders and stakeholders. The purpose of this call for proposals is to identify grantees who can lead that effort, the effort to provide clear principles that set a high standard for the healthcare sector, to provide equitable care that fully addresses people's physical, emotional, and social needs, and guidance for implementing care delivery that is fully responsive to patients' goals, needs, and life circumstances, using maternal morbidity and mortality as a case example. This program has two component parts. Applicants may apply to lead one or both component parts. For part one, clear principles, up to $3 million is available in funding to fund one grantee organization or a collaboration among multiple organizations. For part two, guidance, up to $2 million in funding is available, again, to fund either one grantee organization or a collaboration of organizations with a lead grantee identified. If two distinct lead grantees are selected for the two program components, classes, these would work closely with one another to ensure that lessons from the work in both parts can appropriately inform the other program component. Organizations can apply as a collaboration with a lead organization and subcontractors to execute various program components. In terms of sequencing, there's an expectation that the final products will be heavily influenced by the findings in the other component, and that much of the work can take place concurrently with collaboration and sharing of lessons between the parts. So again, I want to encourage you to look at the funding opportunity brochure for more detail on the program components. I'm about to share a little bit more about each component, but it's a very high level version. So again, I'm going to really encourage you to look at the funding opportunity brochure, especially page 3 and 4, which outlines the program components. So for part one, clear principles, we would expect the lead grantee or a team of grantees and subcontractors to convene an advisory group to guide the work, to conduct an environmental scan of the current landscape and debates in the field, to develop and define or identify a framework to guide engagement with key stakeholders, to convene key stakeholders to discuss, debate, and understand the varying perspectives and the responsibilities of the healthcare sector in addressing people's interrelated needs along the spectrum of internally focused work to community focused work. We would expect this program component to develop a refined framework based on that convening or set of convenings and a set of principles, and to define specific audiences for the project, to generate and test messages that are designed to reach those audiences, and then to develop and deploy a strategic communications plan and execute those tasks. For part two, guidance, this opportunity will fund a grantee or a team of grantees and subcontractors to create a use case based around healthcare's role in reducing maternal morbidity and mortality, identify areas related to health system capacity that could facilitate or hinder the implementation of new ways to deliver care that align with principles identified in part one, to develop practical guidance regarding promising practices, principles for and examples or models of how healthcare can and should help the people they serve to live their healthiest lives through the work of healthcare delivery, and to develop and deploy strategic communications tactics. To apply for this opportunity, we're asking applicants to submit a 5-page brief proposal per program component. So your brief proposal, if you're submitting to both, you would have 10 pages, but they should be submitted separately using the separate for the brief proposal, the questions that you should answer are outlined in the CFP. But briefly, it is asking you to outline your vision and rationale for the work, anticipated challenges, relevant prior experiences, and your plan for identifying and sharing key messages and expected outcomes from the work. Brief proposals should also include a preliminary budget estimate, but at this stage, budget detail is not needed. We will ask for additional budget detail in the second phase for select applicants who are invited to submit full proposals. For the full proposal stage, select applicants from phase one will be invited to submit a full proposal. That proposal should be no more than 20 pages and will include a detailed budget and budget narrative. We may also hold vehicles with a subset of the phase two applicants. The selection criteria opportunity are outlined in the CFP, and these criteria are the same criteria for both the brief and full proposals. And these criteria are the ones that reviewers will use to select finalists. Finally, I want to go over the key dates. Brief proposals are due on August 15th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. You can apply online using the link above. And for questions about the online application and review system, you can contact Carol Salinger, whose email address is listed here. And you can also contact me with questions, but Carol's the better person to contact for technical questions. Full proposals will be invited sometime in mid-September, and then will be due on October 14th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And in early December is when we'll notify finalists, and grants will begin on March 1st of 2020. So now is the time to ask your questions. I got a few in advance, which I will go over now, and I see that we already have a few questions in the Q&A, so feel free to submit your questions now. Okay, so the first question I see is, for the CLEAR Principles component, can we propose co-directors to leverage complementary expertise in mission fulfillment? And the answer to that question is yes, you can absolutely propose co-directors. A second question, is this a $2 or $3 million per grantee or total funding overall? There's $3 million in funding available for the CLEAR Principles component, and that should be inclusive of all grantees and subcontractors for that component. And then there is $2 million available for the guidance component, which should be inclusive of all grantees and subcontractors for that component. The next question I see is, this funding is not restricted to maternal mortality and morbidity, is it? And the answer is that maternal morbidity and mortality should be the focus of the use case, so the activities under the guidance component of this project, but the CLEAR principles would go beyond any single population or health condition. The CLEAR principles would really be broad to inform all of our work in healthcare, and the guidance work would focus on maternal morbidity and mortality. Okay, I've got a question that says, can you say more about why you decided to make the two parts separate? They seem very closely linked and ideally done together, so it would be helpful to better understand why you decided to make it two separate parts, potentially done by two separate organizations. And the answer there is that we really felt like while the work should be highly linked, we didn't necessarily think that one organization or even one set of collaborators would necessarily be the right mix to do both parts because of the specific focus on maternal morbidity and mortality for the guidance component. We really wanted to make sure that people with expertise on that topic were in a leading role for that work, and also that that the work would proceed both in a way that is more theoretical and broad, taking kind of a blue sky approach in the CLEAR principles component, but also kind of ground up. You know, what would it look like to really exemplify our aspirations for a culture of health on this particular topic, knowing that those lessons could roll up to influence the CLEAR principles work. I think we want the work to influence the two parts to influence one another and would expect close collaboration, but we weren't sure that it made sense to try to fund it as one program led by a single organization. Okay, the next question I got is, will there be a preference for new organizations, ones not already receiving RWJF funding, or will all applicants be considered equally regardless of their current relationship with RWJF? And the answer there is that there's no preference for people who have received RWJF funding in the past or vice versa. Any relationship with RWJF is not part of the selection criteria, so it shouldn't be something that the reviewers are considering, although there are criteria about, you know, reputation in the field and experience, but it doesn't necessarily have to be with RWJF that that experience came. Okay. Are proposals specific to certain populations eligible? For example, healthcare delivery specifically for adults with disabilities. And I would say for the CLEAR principles component, we are not looking for a proposal that would be specific to a certain population. We're really looking for principles that can guide all of our work at RWJF that's focused on the healthcare system and its role in helping to build a culture of health. So something that is narrowly focused on one population would not be eligible for the CLEAR principles component. One question was, so only one grantee will be chosen for each component, and that is correct. It'll be either a grantee or a team of grantees that apply together for each program component. So only two grantee leads at most will be chosen for this work. One person asked if they could apply to be part of a collaborative effort, but didn't find a partner that would like to be matched up. And unfortunately, we're not able to kind of support that kind of matchmaking on our end. So we'd encourage you to work with another organization if you want to submit as part of a team. What types of organizations might make a good applicant? Has RWJF thought about this, or do we have any assumptions? And I would say we have thought about what experience would be important, and that experience is outlined in the selection criteria. So things like experience in managing, analyzing, and synthesizing information from various sources, evidence of strong, active relationships in the healthcare sector, especially with health system leaders, and a reputation as a good collaborator. Those are a couple examples from the selection criteria, and that is what the reviewers will be looking for. Okay, in using maternal mortality and morbidity as a case example for the guidance component, does that mean that maternal morbidity will be the sole case example or one among possibly several? We are expecting that the guidance component will focus in only on maternal morbidity and mortality and take a really deep dive on that topic in particular. With so many organizations around the country working on issues related to and are we assuming that the winning organization will propose to gather all those people together and consult with them, particularly on principles? So I think that's a great question. We are looking for one organization to lead the work in each component, and we are expecting a very collaborative approach. And we would expect that the approach would include convening as part of the work as outlined in the program components, not necessarily saying that every organization in the country working on those issues would be part of the work necessarily, but stakeholder engagement is a huge part of what we're seeking, that's why we're looking for things like evidence of strong active relationships in the healthcare sector and asking about your plans for reaching and working with various stakeholders. Okay, one question is, what does sufficient capacity mean? Could an organization hire new people to carry out the deliverables under management and leadership of existing staff? Yes, it is okay to hire new staff, although we don't always encourage for new staff to be hired when a short-term grant is the reason behind it. But sufficient capacity can include some TBD positions. That's not a specific part of what we're looking for in the selection criteria. And we've had other grantees hire in the past. One question was, can you comment on what the evaluation will focus on? And I would say that the evaluation will be looking at the degree to which this program has goals outlined for it. So it wouldn't necessarily be a focus on the performance of a particular grantee, but really about what can we learn from from the program's structure and topic and activities that can help us to ensure that we're meeting our goals and to make adaptations for future work to make sure that that work can meet its goals. One question was, what does it mean for an organization to organizational infrastructure? Does this mean the grant would not support staffing? No, this grant can support staff time. That is definitely something that is okay to include in your budget. One question was, can this process be regional rather than national? And I would say, as a national philanthropy, RWJF is really interested in broad perspectives and not only a regional approach. One question was, do you have a specific definition in mind for the healthcare system? I'm assuming you are using a wide net, including insurers, hospitals, et cetera, but wanted to check. Yes, I think that we are taking a wide definition of the healthcare system and would want defining key stakeholders and audiences to be a part of the work that the lead grantee would execute. Will existing programs be considered? I'm not exactly sure what that means, but if it means that existing organizations that are doing similar work, I think we would look for organizations that really meet the selection criteria and that would be able to execute on the programmatic components that are outlined in the CFP. So that's what the reviewers will be looking for. To what extent should applicants assume active involvement and participation of RWJF communication partners versus building this time and effort into the proposal itself? That's a great question. So we are expecting that RWJF communication partners, especially the firms that we work closely with, will play an active and involved role in the work. And some of that may be built into the proposal, but we may fund some of that work separately as well. And so you don't necessarily need to build all of that time and effort into the proposal itself. And that's something that we can provide more detail on as proposals get further further through the process of the two phases. How many applicants will be awarded the grants? So one lead applicant per program component, but again, there can be subcontractors, maybe even multiple subcontractors on each component. And it is possible for one organization to lead both components. Who will be on the selection committee? We are currently reaching out to a group of experts in the field who we have worked with in the past to serve as proposal reviewers and to be part of the selection committee. Also, several staff from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation will be on the selection committee, along with members of the communications firm that we work with most closely on our healthcare work. Because this is an open call for proposals, we're still figuring out who may be interested in applying versus someone who might be on the selection committee, so we have not made announcements yet. Okay, I note that the guidance component is to occur at the same time or nearly the same time as the CLEAR principles component. What is RWJF's vision for this, given that the principles must be compiled and vetted before guidance can be fully developed? This is also a great question. So we think that the development of the use case should not necessarily wait until the principles have been fully identified and articulated, because the activities of envisioning and developing the use case can offer important lessons that could inform the principles in important ways. Sometimes we think starting from a specific example can generate important lessons that could be generalizable to other topics, and we think that that may be the case with this project in particular. So we would want the timelines to be operating concurrently so that lessons can be shared back and forth between the two grantees in their work. Okay, we are working with the city and other hospitals to place homeless people who come to our hospitals in permanent housing. Would something like this fit this type of project? So I'm not able to comment on fit for specific proposed work, but what I can say is that what we are looking for are the specific activities that are outlined in the call for proposals document. So those are the activities that we want this work to fund, and we'll be using the selection criteria that's in the CFP to make decisions about which grantee organization is the best fit for the work. Is it okay if collaborators are not 501c3s? Yes, It's fine to have subcontracts or collaborations with organizations that are not 501c3s. In our eligibility criteria, we outline that preference will be given to applicants that are either public entities or nonprofit organizations that are tax exempt under 501c3 and are not private foundations or type 3 supporting organizations. But it is okay to have collaborators and who are not 501c3s. Another question, for part one, can we also include our own communications expertise for the activities related to strategic communications, or will RWJF communications team have the lead for all communications work? We do expect that the applicant organizations will use their communications expertise and play a leading role in communications work, and then work closely with the RWJF communications team for that communications work. Would an integrated care organization with a focus on renal care be considered a viable candidate for the CLEAR Principles grant? Again, I can't comment on the fit of specific organizations or topics, but we're looking for an organization to do the activities outlined in the CFP using the selection criteria in the CFP. I think I answered that one. Will the principal lead also need to have strong partnerships in public health and human service sectors? Really great question. So we are expecting that collaboration across different sectors like public health and human services will be important. It's not necessarily outlined in the selection criteria that those relationships fully exist now, but one thing that is in the selection criteria is a clear plan for executing the work in this program in a way that is collaborative and inclusive. And we would expect collaboration and inclusivity with public health, with human services sectors, with consumer groups and consumer advocates to be really important for this work. For collaborative proposals, does RWJF envision that organizations from different physical regions would be able to partner to effectively conduct grant activities? Yes, we have done work with organizations across the country in collaboration with one another many times, and we've seen that model work well. Will the guidance grant fund direct program activities? Such as hiring community health workers to provide in-home services dealing with maternal health. So no, we are not looking to fund direct service as part of this work. We are looking to fund the activities that are outlined in the program components section, outlined in the program. Okay, another question, would it be appropriate for phase two to focus on a specific population? So phase two is the second phase of the proposal process. So where we'll be asking for full proposals for 20-page proposals from a subset of applicants from part one. But the program activities and the selection criteria are the same for both phases, for the brief proposal phase and for the full proposal phase. For the guidance narrative, when answering the question on what are the short and long-term expected outcomes, should this be limited to maternal morbidity and mortality or more broad? So I think we are looking for the broad expected outcomes of the work. Even for the guidance component, we'd be looking for expected outcomes both on that topic and also potentially more broadly in keeping with the broad goals of the program overall. Should the LOI be up to 5 pages or 2? The brochure said 2 pages, but you said otherwise earlier. I'm sorry if the brochure said 2 pages. That is incorrect. It's up to 5 pages for each program component. So not a 2-page, but 5 pages for brief proposals, and I will check and make sure that we don't have a typo, and if we do, I will get that corrected. So thank you. If you prefer a national collaborative, does regional collaborative considered unresponsive? Also, if National Collaborative sends 3 million 24 months, possible to fit that aspiration. I'm not quite sure how to answer this question. I think we are, because we are a nationally focused philanthropy, we're looking for a program that can inform all of our healthcare work. But I think that if it's possible for a collaborative within a region to fully meet the selection criteria that are outlined in the proposal, and to fully complete the work that's outlined under the program description, then they would be considered. When you say that you are interested in broad perspectives and not a regional approach, are you suggesting that input needs to be national when it comes to stakeholders? So we are looking for a collaborative and inclusive process throughout the work. We really talk in much greater detail in the program description. And so, yes, we would be looking for broad engagement with stakeholders. Is it possible to receive feedback on proposals submitted that were not chosen to move forward? I'm sorry to say that, unfortunately, we're not able to provide feedback on proposals that are not chosen to move forward. We just don't have the bandwidth to comment on every proposal. And so in keeping with our principles of fairness, we don't offer that kind of feedback to any applicants, unfortunately. How many phase one applicants will advance to phase two to submit a full proposal? We don't have an exact number in mind, but we would imagine we would try to keep it to a small number so that the odds of receiving funds are much higher for phase two proposals. The exact number will probably depend on how many proposals come in and how many are, you know, very strong, where their review committee would like to see a full proposal. Do you have a preference for applicants who use internal staff versus engage external consultants, such as nationally recognized consulting groups, to perform some of the scope of work, such as organizing stakeholder meetings? I would say no, there's nothing in the selection criteria about that balance, so it wouldn't be something that the review committee would be considering. Can you say more about what is intended for the outputs of this project after the end of the grant period to guide future investment from RWJF, adoption in the field, or other? Thanks. Great question. We do want these principles to guide future investment from RWJF. As we say in the call for proposals, we are not necessarily expecting that the entire field will rally around one set of principles. Although I think we do hope that some organizations will want to adopt these principles as their own, or at least some of them as their own, and that would be something we would like to see. But they will absolutely be used to guide future investment from RWJF. That's a major goal of what we want to accomplish with this work. Can you say more on how health equity fits into either component? As many health disparities result from inequitable systems and policies outside the healthcare sector, structural issues play an important role in health. That's absolutely true. And we want to make sure that this project is fully examining some of these questions. Many health disparities result from inequitable systems and policies outside the healthcare sector, but many health disparities also result from inequitable systems and policies within the healthcare sector. So we would want to see attention to both of those issues and really thinking through what healthcare's role should be in taking on those issues and really living into its potential as an actor contributing toward our aspirations for a culture of health, which is, in our definition, really centered around health equity and helping people to have the opportunity to live their healthiest possible life. If one organization applies for both Part 1 and Part 2, do we write separate five-page proposals for each or only one five-page proposal that discusses Part 1 and Part 2? So if one organization applies for both, we do ask for two separate five-page proposals, answering the question each one in part. The brief proposals are similar but not identical for the two component parts, and the questions that we want to see answered are outlined in the call for proposals document. You mentioned accepting submissions from teams or partners. What would your ideal team be made of? A private sector partner, performer, academic entity, epidemiology, ME, et cetera. We don't have any specific team or potential partners in mind. We are looking for the kinds of experience that are listed in the selection criteria. And so whatever team could do a great job of delivering on those criteria would be a team that we would want to strongly consider. Does RWJF have an existing database or any prior programs to build upon? Will those be available to grantees? RWJF does keep a grants database on our website publicly, where there's information on all of our all the grants that we fund. So that's always available, not only to the applicants to this work, but also to any person, that they're publicly available. But we would also, you know, share relevant relevant information or reports or any other materials from grantees that have been published that we think might be useful once the lead grantees are up and running. What are the expected outcomes and deliverables that awarded projects will generate? So that is something that is outlined in detail in the program section on page 3 and 4 of the offer proposals document, is the specific activities and goals that we want to see from this work. Can you briefly describe the organizations that would be eligible again? That is listed in the eligibility criteria, which is on page 4 of the call for proposals document. So that's where you can find the eligibility criteria. Okay, what experience are you looking for? The selection criteria has several criteria listed, including different types of experience. So I, rather than read those to you over the phone, I'd encourage you to look at page 5 of the call for proposals document, which outlines all of the selection criteria for the program. One question that I got in advance that I want to touch on was a question. And how do you define care in the CSC, and does it include healthcare's role in community health improvement? The third bullet in the program component suggests that you do want the principles to include activities related to improving community health, but the top line talks only about patient care, which typically refers to clinical care activities. Can you clarify? So the answer to that question is part one, clear principles should include varying perspectives on the responsibilities of healthcare in addressing people's interrelated needs along the spectrum of internally focused to community focused work. And we felt that it was important to define principles that touch on the full spectrum of healthcare's responsibilities. At the same time, we want this set of clear principles to inform all of RWJF's work in healthcare and want to emphasize healthcare's core responsibility of providing equitable patient-centered care delivery and clinical preventive services. So clinical care should be a major, but not necessarily exclusive, focus of the clear principles work. And for the guidance component, the expected work will focus primarily on healthcare delivery and clinical activities, but not necessarily to the complete exclusion of attention to community health or working with partners. Can two healthcare regional nonprofit networks qualify as collaborators? I would say any organizations that are eligible and that can meet the selection criteria can submit a proposal, and that would include healthcare nonprofit networks. Another question that I received in advance was, Is there a limit to the number of subcontractors that can be part of an application? And no, there is no limit to the number of subcontractors that can be part of an application. And also, organizations may be listed as a subcontractor on multiple grant applications if they choose. So I'm not seeing any additional questions. I'm going to wait for a few moments to see if other questions come up. Is there a particular place in the application project proposal where potential subcontractors should be discussed? Also, is the only CV to be uploaded for the project director? So to answer the second question first, yes, the only CV that we're asking for at this point is for the project director. Is there a particular place to discuss potential subcontractors? No, there's not any particular place where that has to be discussed. What we're asking for in the brief proposal is your answers to the questions that are outlined there. Is the co-director considered to be a subcontract if it's a different organization from the director? I guess the answer to that question is that they could be considered a subcontract if they're not part of the same lead organization. But at this point in the proposal, we're not looking for a whole lot of detail in the budget narrative about the lead grantee versus subcontractors. There's no budget narrative at this phase. So at this phase, we're just looking for a preliminary budget estimate. Can an organization focus on a specific population to define the CLEAR principles and then recommendations on how to expand this to broader populations? I guess I don't really know how to answer that question. If that's sort of part of your vision and it would align with the program activities and components and meet the selection criteria, then we'd want to see more about that in your proposal. Will applications who propose to do both 1 and 2 be scored higher or be at more of an advantage of being funded than applications who only propose to do one of these? No, there's no benefit for either applying for only one or applying for both together. That's why we separated these out, as we really wanted to give the opportunity for organizations who had the expertise and interest in doing just one program component to have the opportunity to do so. But that doesn't mean that we wouldn't also strongly consider an application where part 1 and 2 are being led by the same organization. It's really about the strongest possible applications for meeting the programmatic components that are outlined in the CFP and meeting the selection criteria. What is the scope for definition of maternal morbidity? Does it include early onset of chronic illness following pregnancy complications, closely related but beyond the postpartum period? I don't think that we at RWJF will necessarily put strict guardrails around that definition. We'd really be looking for the grantee to use their own definition of the topic based on what they think would be best for the program. Another question about CVs. We only need a CV for the project director for the brief proposal phase. Will organizations that are invited back for a full proposal, will they be informed of all organizations invited back, especially thinking if they only applied for one part and can see potential partners? That's a good question. We had not planned to share the list publicly. That was not something that we had planned to do. I do not see budget included in the selection criteria. Will budget be considered, i.e. is there any advantage to propose lower budgets than the maximum? No, there's no advantage or disadvantage to proposing a lower budget. Like you said, it's not part of the selection criteria. We're really looking we're really looking for a strong plan for completing the work. Must all subcontractors be named at the time of the LOI, or may they be added to the phase two proposal if the proposal moves to that stage? No, all subcontractors do not need to be named at the time of the LOI. We're looking for answers to the questions that are outlined in the CFP, and that doesn't necessarily include a listing of all subcontractors. Given the five-page limit in phase one, what type of preliminary budget information do you want and how long? One page of budget information maximum. You'll see that what in the online system, what we ask for is just a preliminary budget estimate. It's a very short form, and there's no budget narrative needed at this time. So you can see by downloading the proposal template from the RWJS site exactly what we're asking for at this phase. Do project directors need a long history of publications? I would say we're looking for the experience that is listed in the selection criteria, but not necessarily for the project director to have all of that in one person. So that's not part of what we'll be looking for. Are multiple principal investigators acceptable as part of a broad team that is national in scope? Yes, more than one. We can have more than one director. We can have a director and a co-director, and that is perfectly acceptable. Okay, again, I'm not seeing any additional questions. I'll wait a few moments if anybody's typing them now. Okay, well, not seeing any additional questions. I want to thank you all for taking the time to join me for this webinar. If you have additional questions that come up, feel free to send me an email and I'll aim to answer those as quickly as I can. Again, we recorded this webinar, so it will be available on the RWJS website, and we're going to summarize the answers to the questions in the FAQs document. So again, thanks so much and enjoy the rest of your day. Bye-bye.